Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
Shoplifting. You think you know what it is? Then along comes a book that reminds you how much more there is to know. Shoplifters have been called kleptos, lifters, boosters. They use magic bags with false bottoms and boxes with metal lining to foil security tags. They cost stores nearly $12 billion a year. It's called shrink. The most shoplifted item recently? The Gillette Mach 3 razor. People shoplift in protest, like Spain's anarchist group Yo Mango, which means I steal. Rare book stealers have a special category. It's called bibliomania. Shoplifters get everything from a slap on the wrist, think actress Winona Ryder, to death. Six alleged shoplifters have been killed by security guards at one chain store, Dillard's, since 1994. Why do people shoplift? Well, it depends on who you ask. And author Rachel Shire asked just about everyone in her new book, The Steal, The Cultural History of Shoplifting. And Rachel Shire joins us from the NPR studios in New York. Welcome.
Hi.
Boy, I mean, you go all the way back to Prometheus, who stole fire.
Yes, I do.
The fictional Moll Flanders, who stole to support her children, to real-life modern-day shoplifters that you meet. Is there one thread that connects all shoplifting?
There are a couple of threads. I think one thread is the relationship between shoplifting and business or commerce. Obviously, shoplifting could not exist without commerce.
Right.
So I'm following that thread. And then just the protean nature of shoplifting, the way, as you put it so eloquently in your intro, it shifts from thing to thing is one thing that I just became obsessed with.
Yeah, just when you think you know what it is. Well, let's just talk about what they steal. I mean, you have one astonishing list. A woman walks out of a store with a mattress. Another drags a fully decorated Christmas tree out. One guy steals so many fly rods, he has to go get a truck. You know, what are some of the other things that people steal?
People steal things that, in general, that they want, not things that they need. And by need, I mean things that we need to survive, like in the idea of Jean Valjean stealing a loaf of bread. People steal Rogaine, painkillers, luxury items, handbags, but also luxury or high-end food like steak, EPT pregnancy tests.
Well, they steal to resell it. Bands of criminals do that?
Right. There are two different kinds of shoplifters, or one way of grouping them anyway, is amateurs and professionals. Professionals are also called boosters, and today they steal in gangs. And all of the items I mentioned are stolen both by amateurs and by professionals. So that's one of the interesting things. Professionals steal some of those items to resell them at flea markets or online or at swap meets, and people buy them at a price that is less than retail price. So consumers going to these swap meets or buying stuff on eBay that is not for the same price that you pay in a store. And then amateur thieves or amateur shoplifters steal some of those items for a number of different reasons. Either it arises out of shame, or it arises out of a sense that the item costs too much for the ordinary person, or it comes out of a desire to get back at the store, or some researchers consider shoplifting of those items to be part of an impulse control disorder.
Historically, in 18th century England, when people stole, they could be hanged together at the Tyburn Tree gallows. And there were cases even then of wealthy people shoplifting when they had money to buy what they wanted.
What I would say about the early years of shoplifting, the early centuries, is there was no language to talk about it as a psychologically driven or emotionally driven event. That only happened with the advent of Freud and modern psychology and the realization that the unconscious could motivate us.
Well, and this starts another thread that runs through your reporting, that they had to come up with a reason for these wealthier women to go into stores and steal. Meanwhile, poor people who might have stolen, you know, as you said, the occasional loaf of bread, they were considered bad and they might end up in jail, whereas wealthier people were treated as if there must be something wrong with them. They must be crazy.
That's exactly right. And from the minute that the psychological discussion begins, also begins a legal discussion of what to do with these people who are middle-class people and who are shoplifting but don't seem to be shoplifting as criminals. And there's much discussion about, Are they imposters? You know, are they pretending to be sick when in fact they're only criminals? There's tons and tons and tons of literature in medical journals of the time where people are trying to figure out what to do and should they put these women in prison or should they not put them in prison? And that just goes on. And I think it's really still continuing today, that conversation and confusion about what should we do with people who seem to be made ill and are compelled to steal.
Mark Twain in 1888 writes, "In these days, if a person of good family and high social standing steals anything, they call it kleptomania and send them to the lunatic asylum." But today, you know, you meet people who are going to these 12-step meetings. "Hello, my name is such and such. I'm a shoplifter." And what do they tell you about, you know, something that seems to happen to them that does seem to happen to people whose hand is drawn to a drink?
Yeah, I mean, there are people that I met who definitely believe that shoplifting is an addiction, and there are some researchers who also support that. I guess to me, that was just one more stage of trying to figure out what shoplifting is, and it doesn't really, to me, necessarily fit any better in the addiction model than it does in any other model that we have tried to shove it into.
At least not in every case, because every case seems to be different. But you did talk to people who almost went into a trance.
That was actually one of the things that started me on the book, the idea of going into a trance when you go into a store. Because if you remember during the Winona Ryder trial, you could read the transcripts from the trial or excerpts of the transcripts on websites. I think it was one of the first times that you could read the transcript of a celebrity case online. There's one line she has about she was shoplifting. They ask her why she was shoplifting, and she says, "I was preparing for a role." And everyone, all media jumped all over her and said, "Well, what role was it? Who was she working for? Was it Steve Martin? You know, was it so-and-so?" And it turned out that she wasn't. It seemed that she wasn't actually preparing for any role. But I saw it another way. I saw that she was in a trance when she went into the store. So she was, in a way, playing a role. She was playing. I don't know what it was. I have no idea what it was. But I can say that when you look at the video, the surveillance video of her in the store, she definitely seems like she's in a trance, and she seems like she's playing a role. She doesn't seem like, I don't know, herself, for lack of a better word.
Well, and you talk to other shoplifters who talk about getting flushed and getting this just this general feeling of excitement, and some who say they shoplift to block out abuse they might have had. You speak with I think it's a psychologist who ties it to the mother, always goes back to the mother, and how you steal something to try to get the mother love you didn't have, or you, because you're an outsider. I mean, all these theories. But then you come to someone like filmmaker John Waters, who said, no, it was for fun.
Fun, there's the thrill of the steal, and stealing is very exciting. And again, there's science to back that up. It raises your dopamine level. And I talked to many shoplifters who told stories of running through the store very excited. And they talked about themselves as though they were heroes in a kind of video game or an epic saga. And there definitely was a sense of excitement.
Rachel Steyer, author of The Steal, A Cultural History of Shoplifting, Shoplifting to Eat, Shoplifting as an Addiction or a Thrill. And Rachel, the 70s gave us, you know, the five-finger discount. Abbie Hoffman wrote Steal This Book. We mentioned Spain's anarchist group Yo Mango. This is shoplifting as protest and performance art.
Yes, absolutely. And again, to me, that's a theme, the idea that you're shoplifting to get back something, whether that something is a political thing, whether it's an economic thing, whether it has to do with your mother. I think that many people shoplift in order to correct something, some sense of injustice. It's not a one-to-one thing. It's not a direct thing. It's indirect. But I definitely heard that a lot, the sense of getting back. Compensatory.
Talk about how the industry responds to this. Everything from the Dillard's chain that you mentioned that hires off-duty cops who have a propensity to, you know, tackle or shoot shoplifters to stores like The Gap that don't even, it's sort of like, I've walked out of The Gap, they left the thingy on.
Yeah.
And the thing goes on and nobody says anything.
Yep. It's nobody does anything.
Right. Mm-hmm. What's that split?
Well, there's a real range, as you're observing. I would say, in general, the trend is towards more security, more draconian security. But you're absolutely right that at the same time, I have also witnessed many people walking out of stores with the tags still on the items and nothing happening. But having said that, then there's also all of this new technology, including CCTV cameras, smart devices which can tell when somebody is grabbing something on a shelf. There's putting the cameras at eye level. I mean, I would say that we're rapidly going towards a world in which a store is going to be kind of like going to the airport is now, where maybe they'll have scanners. There's also there's high-tech chips. They're not used so much in America, but RFID chips, which can trace mass-produced items from the store to your house. So in the future, somebody will, by looking at a barcode, be able to tell, oh, just because that's a piece of gum, you shoplifted that exact piece of gum from that exact store. Which now is, most stores do not take advantage of that technology. But in the future, I think that they will. And there, of course, there's bag checks. So there's all kinds of things. To me, the question is all of this stuff stopping shoplifting? And what I would say is the dollar amount that shoplifting costs stores every year continues to go up.
Well, and I'm just sitting here thinking, oh, my gosh, they're going to be able to trace a piece of gum, but we can't find lost children, you know.
Right.
I also don't want to let go of that idea that there are some stores who really, to them, it's bad PR. So they don't want to catch you. You just have to figure out which store it is.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, some stores have taken more the route of, I guess, what I would call laissez-faire anti-shoplifting methods, like The Gap. But a lot of stores have really begun, particularly big box stores that can afford it, have begun to really pile on the tech.
Well, there's something the industry refers to as, and probably African-Americans refer to as shopping while black, you know, racial profiling of who a shoplifter is. But you talked to a researcher who said shoplifters are mostly white or largely white.
There are a couple of myths that need to be busted about shoplifting. One is that most shoplifters are women. Most recent research has shown that most shoplifters are men.
And what are some of the other myths, just while we're on that?
I think another myth is that shoplifting, it's a trivial crime and it doesn't affect stores. It does affect stores, and it also does affect people. There's a crime tax, which is $400 per American family per year. So you are paying a higher price for goods because people are shoplifting.
Well, and what about the punishment? You talked about the crime. What about the punishment? 17 states have raised the felony level for retail theft. But it's so uneven. If you're in a three strikes and you're out state, you can go to prison for life. It's all over the board.
It's all over. I completely agree with you. There are states where to steal anything is a felony. And then there's states where, you know, you have to get up to an $1,000 level for it to be a felony. And it does make a difference in the punishment. And now stores have made a lot of effort at the state and the federal level to try and increase punishments for organized retail theft gangs. So, for example, they have statutes in some states like if you have a booster bag, if you're, or if you have a device that takes off the tags, the amount of punishment can immediately be raised from a misdemeanor to a felony. But it's not really known what the effect of all this is having so far. On the other hand, I met people who had shoplifted, I don't know, let's say maybe 20 or 30 times, and they had not done any jail time.
And what would you say overall, Rachel, about your attitude towards shoplifters, having met so many and such a variety? You seem somewhat sympathetic.
Yeah, I mean, I think the point of the book was not to justify shoplifting, but it was to explain it and to look at its complexity. And I was really driven by the fact that there's so little research. My great hope is that the book will drive others, scientists, economists, and so on, to do more specific research, which can examine some of these questions that were out of my reach in the book.
Yeah, well, that's what I was going to ask. Is that what you suggest? I mean, or, you know, what kind
definitely.
Of...
I mean, I think, like, for example, we don't really know what the effect of the economy is on shoplifting. There's just been very little work done on it. We know that shoplifting does go up somewhat during the recession. But in terms of how specifically it goes up, what I, and I'm speaking purely anecdotally here, what I have come to understand is that when during a recession, people shoplift, but they still do shoplift those luxury items. So, for example, they'll shoplift expensive French face cream because it's now out of their reach, or because, you know, they feel like they're entitled to it, or any of the other reasons that I mentioned. There's only been one really large-scale study on shoplifting altogether. So, I mean, that's not very many studies to compare.
Right. Especially when we're hearing the enormity of this. And have you ever shoplifted?
I shoplifted as a kid from Woolworths. Remember Woolworths?
Oh, Five and Dime, sure.
Five and Dime stores, yeah. Yeah, I shoplifted some gum from Woolworths.
Rebecca Steyer, her new book, The Steal, A Cultural History of Shoplifting, will have an excerpt at herenow.org. Rachel, thank you so much.
Thank you.